free ride. 2 months and 2 weeks after the lecture Dumbledore had forgotten to give, Arthur Weasley's company set themselves up in the ruins of Whitby Abbey, ostensibly following orders from Ministry Intelligence to thwart a predicted Death Eater attack on the populace below. Since everyone, especially Arthur Weasley, knew Ministry Intelligence was a contradiction in terms, the group settled in for a well-deserved rest. Drill was canceled for 5 days, curfew extended until midnight, the night watch suspended, and, best of all, Arthur himself had gone home 5 days earlier and had yet to return. The morning of 29 December found Sirius sprawled in his bathrobe on a red velvet armchair, feeling excessively pleased with himself, although he had yet to do anything at all besides get out of bed, slam back a thermos of black coffee, and urinate in the snow. His high spirit stemmed entirely from anticipation, and utter an absolute certainty that tonight's adventure would succeed beyond his wildest dreams. Sirius was a positive thinker. He was a positive thinker, but not an introspective one, and since there was only a certain amount of solitude he could endure, a length of time consisting of exactly 12 minutes, he bounded over to the wireless, switched the station to M104.5, wicked vibes for the wizard who jives, and cranked it up to deafening proportions. The melody, assuming there was one, wasn't audible, but he could hear the bass line in his chest. The desired result was obtained immediately when Lupin sat up and started shouting, "Turn that shit down, asshole!" "What's that?" Sirius responded gleefully. "Can't hear you, mate." This statement was followed by a blurred arm movement and a wand blast that singed the top of his ducked head and shattered the wireless into 1,000 pieces, something that did not aggravate Sirius, as much as one might expect, since he knew Lupin could fix it. They replayed this same scenario at least twice weekly anyway.
"All right, Mooney, I'll turn it down," he responded in an injured tone. "If you put it right so I can move the dial..."
Lupin sat up, rubbed his eyes, and regarded Sirius with sleepy and displeased expression.
"Why do you have to do that?"
he said in an exasperated voice.
"You're so fucking annoying. Reparo!"
"Because I am happy," Sirius replied and smiled serenely.
"That is why."
"What?"
"I'm happy, mate," he proclaimed delightedly. "I'm giddy and carefree and filled with joy, Mooney. That is why I wanted you to wake up and talk to me, so you can share in my happiness,"
he finished generously.
"You are so fucking weird,"
Lupin informed Sirius wearily, but he got out of bed. Lupin blazed up the non-flammable fire they kept in a 5-foot marble urn, and Sirius flung a packet of incense within the crackling flames, suffusing the tent with warmth and the spicy fragrance of pomegranates. Breakfast was prepared by sweeping everything off the upturned crate that served as their all-purpose table, and bringing out a large basket nicked from town market yesterday. A basket filled with the biggest, reddest, shiniest strawberries imaginable, a cracked brown jug of Devonshire cream, several pounds of bright gold butter, an enormous slab of fresh bread, and a very stinky but delicious wedge of cheese. Lupin was much improved after breakfast, and launched into a rambling self-congratulatory monologue of his own. Creating a magical map of the Ministry had required the formulation of 12 new geometrical theorems, 14 previously undiscovered algebraic equations, and rapid cross-referencing of vast amounts of navigational, theoretical, metaphysical, and quantum metrology, and his pride in the finished product was boundless. He wouldn't normally have expounded upon it at such lengths, or any length at all, if it had not been 4 days before a blue moon, an event Sirius had been eagerly awaiting for 2 years. Blue Mooney was vastly entertaining, and Sirius was all about the fun. Although, he reminded himself, Blue Mooney also tended to thrust him into the distressing role of being the good guy, or even worse, the voice of reason. These ruminations were rudely interrupted by the sudden appearance of Benji Fenwick, who stomped through the door with a sepulchral expression and flung himself gloomily on top of Lupin's trunk.
"What's up, Fenwick?" Sirius asked brightly, and Benji scowled.
"Have you got these fancy chairs?"
he demanded irritably, indicating the 18th-century red velvet armchairs upon which the two presently reclined,
"on either side of an upside-down chicken crate."
"Sirius tried summoning a table from his house last week," Lupin replied earnestly, "and it didn't turn out so well, really. We think his mom's starting to enchant things against him. I hadn't been here half a minute, and then it exploded into this shitload of pieces and chipped my front tooth. And the pieces had the most unaccountable smell. you know, like a dead cow's opened up belly. Then they started in with this howling like you surely wouldn't believe, he continued doggedly. It was like a dirge sung by the chorus of the damned, wasn't it, Padfoot? We tried vanishing them, but those fuckers wouldn't go, so we just pitched them right outside the tent. Although we hadn't ought to have done that, because then they knocked us right onto the floor and they blasted themselves back in. I'm telling you, we couldn't stand that fucking noise and that god-awful smell. It was going on for an hour by then, so finally, Sirius said, torch that shit up, Mooney, and I'd use fiend fire to make it burn. Except, you know, fiend fire doesn't really do so well inside a tent, he commented thoughtfully. But we were that desperate, weren't we, Sirius?
Benji looked as if he wished he hadn't asked.
It was the day the tent blew up, Fenwick,
Sirius added complacently.
Which day the tent blew up? Your tent's blown up 5 times,
Benji responded crossly.
Why don't you blow up mine, when he's in it?
He burst out stridently.
He's gone right over the edge. I fucking hate him.
This was an uncharacteristically vociferous outburst from the mild-mannered Benji, but neither Lupin nor Sirius needed further clarification of the person in question. He always referred to the Cyclops' raw bone, with whom Benji unwillingly shared a tent.
Last night I woke up and he was standing over me with his longest knife, just staring at me,
Benji yelled and leapt to his feet.
Then he got out every piece of his body parts collection and started playing games with them. Bloody hell,
Sirius said with a pained expression.
Please tell me you made that shite up.
I wish I had, Benji responded dourly and began pacing in front of Lupin's cot.
He's given them names and voices. He sat down on the floor and started moving them around and saying shit like...
Benji paused and fell into an uncanny imitation of Rawbone's deep and raspy voice.
Here comes Arabella Ogriam to visit Mr. Tippletoe. Oh no, little Pansy Pinky is following behind. Grumpy Stumpy Neck won't like it. He fancies so for himself.
I can't believe Weasley makes you stay with him,
Sirius declared disgustedly.
Poncy ginger cunt nugget. It's not him, it's the ministry,
Benji replied dejectedly.
He tried to get an extra tent for me and they told him to forget it. Then he ordered Dillwiggle to swap out with me, and Dillwiggle said he wouldn't and just go ahead and kill him.
There was a long moment of mournful silence while Lupin and Sirius pondered Benji's predicament.
Well, I'd say there's just nothing to be done about it then, Fenwick,
Sirius pronounced grandly, as if he just offered up the perfect solution.
But we'll cheer you up, mate. We'll take you along with us tonight,
he finished magnanimously.
Yeah, sure we will,
Lupin nodded.
This is going to be an excellent night. You don't want to miss out on it.
He pointed to a variety of parchments, scribbled notations, and the ministry map they had put back on top of the crate.
It took us 32 hours to figure it up, and it's perfect,
he proclaimed enthusiastically.
It'll be the best prank ever, you'll see. Look, we made you an honorary marauder for the night.
He pointed his wand at the giant's head, and the flag wiggled itself free, floated gracefully across the room, and tucked itself neatly behind Benji's left ear. Benji seemed gratifyingly excited by this offer, and burst into a great deal of obsequious babbling.
Thanks! Really, thanks! He yelled. You two are like, well, I mean... Thanks! You're just like, you're the greatest, that's what you are,
he finished delightedly.
Yeah, we know that, Fenwick,
Sirius replied smugly.
Here's the thing, Bagshot's got us covered if Weasley comes back tonight. You'll need to come up with a reason you aren't in your tent. Something he can tell the cunt nugget if he asks. He want 5 galleons for it too,
he added glibly.
Well, I don't know what to say,
Benji frowned worriedly.
What's he get to tell Weasley about you two? Mooney went down the shore for a walk,
Sirius yawned,
and I've had the shits all day and can't come out of the woods. You're always using that one,
Benji responded indignantly.
If you shit half as much as you pretend you did, you'd be dead of dysentery. Weasley's got me medical file from Hogwarts, mate,
Sirius responded loftily.
It's all documented right there, Fenwick, about me bowel problems. He started up second year, remember?
Lupin commented lazily.
When he'd grab his belly and roll round on the floor farting. We all knew he was faking it,
Benji rejoined disgustedly.
That and that seizure business.
Not Poppy, Sirius shouted ecstatically, apparently warming to the subject.
Well, she knew the seizure bit was bollocks, but you can't argue with diarrhea, mate, when you've got a fucking arseload of it.
Benji groaned.
I saved up my shit, see?
Sirius pronounced proudly.
Then I'd water it down and keep a lot of it in double charm scent-proof bags inside me robes. Even I couldn't smell it,
Lupin commented with an impressed air.
Sirius is brilliant with charms. Too true, Mooney. Anyway, On the way to the infirmary,
he continued happily, ignoring Benji's nauseated expression,
I'd pour the whole lot of it down the back of me drawers and bust through the door crying. It was a pitiful sight,
he sighed dramatically.
Pomfrey would help me wash up, tuck me in with some warm butter beer, and sing me to sleep. It surely was a spot of genius,
Lupin declared.
Once something's in your Hogwarts medical file, it's there for the rest of your life. I'll never be able to hold down a proper job,
Sirius intoned sadly.
What with me bowel problems and a mental disorder and a drinking and all, I'll just have to make do on the ministry's dole.
He waved his hands theatrically.
Well, that and the 5 million gallons me uncle left me.
He and Lupin started laughing, but Benji did not appear impressed.
Are you even a werewolf?
He demanded and turned on Lupin.
Or is that something else you all came up with so you could get out of class? I don't know,
Lupin hissed threateningly.
Come with me to the shack in 3 days and you'll find out.
Sorry, Benji responded quickly. Anyway, when Weasley gets back, he'll be in a really good mood. He probably won't even care where we are. He told me his wife had some extra special surprise for him for Christmas. She said he was going to love it.
It'll be a radio,
Sirius said in a bored voice.
He'd sell his soul for a muggle radio.
He looked over at Lupin and immediately changed the subject, since he found the topic, as well as the person of Arthur Weasley, to be unbearably tiresome.
We ought to take pictures tonight, Mooney,
he enthused.
Yeah, we're going to want picture of this one. Have you seen me camera?
Not for going on a couple of years or something. Reg probably stole it back.
You could summon it from your house,
Benji suggested helpfully.
Or if your mum's putting enchantments on stuff you summon, you could call up one of your house elves and tell him to go get it. If our house elves have seen it, Fenwick,
Sirius responded with an offended expression,
then it's already been made into a stew, or buried in the garden, or chopped out a window onto the head of a muggle. Or they've built a satanic shrine to it in some dark corner of the scullery, and it's propped up on a little stool surrounded by candles and pentagrams, all covered with blood and pie and smelling like onions.
Not all house elves are like creatures, Sirius,
Benji said in a practical voice.
His are,
Lupin rejoined agreeably.
Every last sodding one.
The boys slipped out of camp as soon as twilight arrived, since the rail station was 6 miles away and notoriously difficult to find. Lupin walked straight into a thick, pathless patch of forest, and Sirius gave Benji an approving glance when he unhesitatingly clambered over enormous tree roots, clawed his way through dense shrubbery, and climbed over boulders without stupid comments like, shouldn't there be a path, or there must be an easier way, that the ignorant would have uttered. They reached the spot where Muggle Forest became Magical Forest rather quickly, and paused to examine a battered old signpost with a rather unwelcoming proclamation.
Welcome to the Forest of Whitby, Yorkshire. Classification, ridiculously and ludicrously dangerous. To avoid disappointment or loss of life, best not to enter.
Lupin grinned, and Sirius whooped with delight. Benji emitted no celebratory noises, although he followed along determinedly as they marched onto a narrow, frost-covered pathway that quickly disappeared within a dense shroud of ancient trees. A mile inside the forest, a frozen stream appeared on their right, followed 100 yards later by a sight which stopped them dead in their tracks. The upper half of a naked young woman in the middle of the icy stream, apparently frozen up to her waist. The girl's face was startlingly beautiful, with pearlescent skin like moonlight on marble, and captivating charcoal eyes rimmed in coal. Moss-green curls clumped with ice tumbled around her swan-like neck and past her slim, feminine shoulders to the top of her breasts. These breasts, later added to Sirius' list of the best tits ever, were very large, full, and thrust out like missiles from her chest, their frosty pink nipples pebbled and pointed with cold.
Look at that!
Benji breathed in an awestruck voice.
Do you think she's dead? Should we get her out and see? Yeah, we should,
Sirius replied quickly, since he definitely wanted to see the rest of her body, whether she was dead or not.
Fliando!
Benji called out eagerly, and the girl rose in a tantalizingly slow fashion, obviously designed to seduce. The curve of her hips emerged over 5 agonizing minutes, followed by 10 more minutes of torture before the icy triangle of thick pubic hair came into view. By now, they were all holding their breath without realizing it. Rounded thighs and then shapely calves followed, until finally the girl was standing atop the frozen pond on rubbery green feet with tightly webbed toes. Something none of them ever noticed.
What are you?
Benji croaked out in a mesmerized voice.
I am a naiad,
she replied sweetly.
You have rescued me.
Benji put his hands in his pockets, shifted position twice, stumbled, and gawked at her with an expression of pure juvenile lust. No shit, water girl, Sirius thought irritably. Benji's expression was embarrassing him.
You admire my beauty, human?
The girl cooed and lowered her thickly frosted eyelashes.
I'm so very cold. Will you warm me with your lovely skin and your caresses?
Lupin made a face at this farcical comment, but studied her with the intense, purely predatory expression Sirius did not like, since it could actually sway a girl's attention away from him.
Yeah, I will, Benji gasped out and staggered towards her. Fenwick, Sirius shouted impatiently. Elementary lesson in prowling about where you aren't meant to be. Anything that promises you something won't fucking deliver.
Well, it delivers, he clarified,
but not what you wanted. Generally something involving a lot of pain and death.
Water spirits will drown you,
Lupin said matter-of-factly, although he kept staring at the girl in a feral fashion.
Especially female ones.
The girl glared fiercely at Lupin.
Do not speak to me, you devil,
she intoned rigidly.
I recognize your kind. You son of Vikings,
she hissed and spat out a tiny fish. Sirius and Lupin started laughing, but Benji wasn't even listening.
I think you're missing something a bit more important, love, Sirius offered up in a friendly voice.
And what do you care if his ancestors were Vikings? Vikings are cool,
he pronounced approvingly.
The last one gave it up for shipbuilding in a cottage in Sussex,
Lupin remarked to no one in particular.
Wrote these memoirs in Middle Norse. They're kind of interesting.
I wouldn't have given it up, Sirius declared argumentatively. Think about it, mate. All that blighting and smiting and scourging and pillaging. What could be better than that?
With all the raids and the woman they captured, how they'd kick you and shriek and bite and throw a great fit when you put them on the ship, and then when you got them back home, they just laid about the house all day gossiping and having babies.
He sighed and shook his head.
I couldn't have stood it either. And if you asked them to please straighten the place up, or maybe just boil them some damned fish for supper, they'd get all aggravated and haughty and start yelling, "You killed our husbands and fathers and expect us to wait on you!" There wasn't any reasoning with them.
Yeah, Sirius agreed. I guess I can see his point.
I am so cold. My bones throb with pain,
the girl cried out beseechingly, and Benji hurried onto the ice and pulled her into his arms.
Wrap me in your cloak, human, and warm me with your passions.
This is going to make me sick,
Lupin told Sirius crossly.
And that sea slag, you know she's going to kill him.
Bloody Fenwick, Sirius sighed and shook his head. That poor bastard's probably never had a piece of arse in his whole life.
He hasn't, Lupin replied in a satisfied voice. He told me so. In confidence, you know.
And there's another for the list, Sirius thought cheerfully. The list being reasons I fucking love Blue Mooney, which now contained a 24th item. The fact that Blue Mooney would readily divulge every secret he had previously sworn the solemnest of oaths not to tell. Benji and the girl stepped from the ice onto the grass, where he quickly conjured up a blanket that was apparently warmed, since the girl sang out,
"The bliss! The ecstasy! Oh, the heated flannel on my soft, soft skin!"
as they dropped to the ground, clutching one another.
She might fuck him before she drowns him, though,
Lupin said thoughtfully.
Or she might roll him in the water and drown him while they're fucking,
Sirius scowled.
I'm not washing his shit, Mooney.
We can't leave him alone with her if we want him to stay alive,
Lupin replied in a bored voice.
Anyway, we don't have to look. It's not like we can't hear them,
he said irritably as they turned their back on the two.
Your hands are like liquid fire on my swollen breasts,
the girl wailed loudly.
Loosen your clothing and impale me upon your burning spear.
Holy fucking mother of God, Sirius barked out. I can't take this shit.
You can't take it. I can hear him breathing,
Lupin responded in an outraged tone.
That sodding bastard. He's going to hyperventilate before he gets off.
My blood burns for you. My frozen skin melts into a liquid pool of desire. It pours down my trembling thighs like a waterfall.
Let's leave him,
Sirius said decisively.
Yeah, let's go, Lupin nodded. Hang on, I think they're finished. He's quit breathing like that. I can't hear him breathing at all anymore,
he added in a pleased voice. Sirius frowned at this.
You better look, Mooney. You look.
I'm not fucking looking. I'm still emotionally scarred from walking in a...
I told you to let us alone.
Lupin hissed in response.
I thought that meant you wanted to talk. Anyway, I had something important to say.
You think everything that crosses your fucking mind is important, Padfoot. And it never is. Like that time you woke me up at 3 a.m. to say, why is there only one of me?
Well, that was important, Mooney. It's a valuable theological question. If God is so wise and perfect and all, why would he only make one of...
There's only one of you because nobody could stand two. I can hardly stand one.
Yeah? Well, suck my dick, you sodding asshole.
The air crackled with the sound of shattering ice, and Sirius and Lupin whirled around just in time to see the Naiad and a trouserless Benji disappearing beneath a hole in the frozen stream.
Damn it to hell!
Sirius shouted.
Fucking Fenwick!
Lupin yelled, and they took off towards the stream, flinging their cloaks to the ground. Lupin dove through the hole immediately, and Sirius followed after a brief hesitation. Like most city fellows, he wasn't particularly fond of swimming. The shock of the ice-cold water seemed to physically blow his eyes open, and through a haze of murky green darkness he glimpsed the Naiad, who now appeared swollen, mottled, and disturbingly grotesque, with her webbed hands around a listless Benji's neck. Lupin was behind her, furiously yanking on her arms, although this didn't seem to be accomplishing anything. Sirius floundered towards the trio, and since he didn't know what else to do, pulled a knife from his boot and stabbed the Naiad with it. With a gush of black liquid spurting from a hole in her thigh, she turned and disappeared into the darkness. Sirius wasted no time clawing his way to the surface, coughing and shaking violently. Lupin climbed out a few seconds later, shuddering with cold as well, and Benji's face bobbed to the surface, shining with an incandescent expression of orgasmic bliss. He was obviously so contented he didn't even mind drowning, since he promptly sank beneath the water without making the slightest attempt to save himself.
"Fucking Fenwick!"
Lupin shouted and plunged back beneath the ice. Much to the surprise of Sirius, since Blue Mooney was not known for acts of selflessness. Quite the opposite, he mused. The last Blue Moon, Lupin had stood idly by while a first-year Gryffindor, and he was the bloody Gryffindor prefect, fell into a monstrous vat of punch at the Christmas ball and returned to groping Narcissa while the child sank to the bottom and flailed about in helpless terror. Lupin struggled back to the surface with an arm around Benji's shoulders, and he and Sirius bodily lifted him from the water and dropped him none too gently onto the ground. Benji voiced no words of gratitude, but merely gazed up at the sky with a pious expression, and Sirius knew Lupin was strongly contemplating kicking him back through the ice.
Come on, Fenwick!
Sirius shouted impatiently, and Benji obediently crawled towards the blanket, where all three collapsed in violent spasms of shaking and shivering. Lupin coughed up a lungful of green water that contained a kicking water beetle and narrowed his eyes ominously at Benji.
Wasn't that great?
Benji moaned ecstatically.
Oh my god! That was so fucking great!
Lupin staggered to his feet and stomped towards Benji, whom Sirius thought really ought to back away, but didn't.
Asshole!
He hollered wrathfully and stood above him, coughing and swaying.
You fucking worthless piece of sodding shit, Fenwick!
Wasn't she beautiful?
Benji crooned gleefully.
She was so fucking beautiful! I mean, before she turned into that.
He wrinkled up his nose.
That is what she actually was, fucking Fenwick!
Lupin yelled, his eyes glittering like gold coins.
A bloody cunt of a fucking water spirit! She almost drowned us all, you cock-sucking little bitch!
Sirius started rolling around on the blanket, convulsed with laughter.
Really, Mooney? Such language!
He told Lupin self-righteously.
What would Mummy say?
It was worth it.
Benji said stubbornly.
Don't fucking talk to me!
Lupin screamed.
Don't say another fucking word, fucking Fenwick!
Sirius conjured up a cigarette and took a deep, satisfied draught.
You don't have to yell at me, Benji replied sullenly. Quit lurking over me like that. It didn't do anything to you.
Stop talking!
Lupin hollered in response.
Did you not fucking hear what I fucking said? Was I unclear in any possible way?
What didn't you two tell me Shag was so great?
Benji demanded accusingly.
If you told me, I'd have done it with one of those whores.
Lupin dropped to his knees and punched the seated Benji in the face, and he fell back on the blanket, groaning piteously.
Oh!
He moaned and clutched his eye.
I can't see! You've killed me!
He shrieked pathetically.
You killed me, Lupin!
Mooney!
Sirius chortled when Lupin whipped out his wand.
He's still under that Naiad spell. That's why he's acting like this, mate. Do not kill him,
he added sternly.
All right,
Lupin groused and put his wand back in his pocket.
Let's go find that damned rail station. Fucking Fenwick.
They emerged from the forest an hour later onto a grassy hill, where they spotted the rail station a few hundred feet below. Without discussion, all three paused, since it seemed a good place to stop and enjoy the moment. The inky black sky was studded with burning white stars, and a cold wind rustled through the tall grass and ruffled their hair. Lupin seemed to have forgotten about the naiad incident and was now whistling cheerfully. Benji wasn't speaking, but maintained a broad, moronic grin across his face, and Sirius found himself fighting back the urge to break into a dance. Freedom and adventure, his two drugs of choice, sang through his veins like liquid adrenaline, and for a moment he was quite certain he was the happiest person on Earth. A few minutes later, they skidded down the grass to the station, and Padfoot appeared, apparently unable to resist the urge to roll around on the ground, let out a few celebratory yelps, wag his tail enthusiastically, and run about in circles.
Sometimes he just needs a break from being human, Lupin told Benji in a practical voice, and sometimes he just wants to celebrate being a dog.
Sirius reappeared with dirt on his nose and grass in his hair, and they crossed the tracks and wandered around to the front of the station house, where a rather alarming number of persons and creatures milled about in front of the ticket window's closed iron gate, jostling for a place in the non-existent queue. Sirius approached a smartly dressed, salaciously smiling satyr with a monocle and a paper folded beneath his arm, since he seemed the most businesslike being in the crowd.
"What's going on here?"
he asked amiably, and the satyr gazed at him keenly.
"Ministry's taken over most of the trains, you know," he replied lazily and adjusted his monocle. "Shipping supplies and whatnot. Passenger train to London only runs once a month."
"Are these people all here for the train?"
Benji asked disbelievingly. A 4-foot blue monkey, sporting a fedora and chewing on a cigar, loped over on long arms, inserting himself rudely in front of the satyr.
"Hey! Hey! Hey!"
it screamed triumphantly.
"There's only 24 seats on the train! 24 seats on the train! You'll never get a ticket. Never!"
It produced a small green tambourine, which it began beating on for emphasis.
"Monkeys always want to give out bad news," Lupin scowled, "and it's generally always total shite. There are a dozen of them down on Strand Quay," he told Sirius knowingly, "and they're all on running up to the village, yelling that a warship with 100 Death Eaters is heading in from Calais, or some muggle woman found 9 dead babies stacked inside a hollowed-out log, or a talking praying mantis the size of a man is walking up St. Port Street looking for the mayor. Well, that actually happened," he added equably. "He sailed all the way from Prue just to visit, you know? The mayor took him up on top of the church for a view, only he scuttled off across the side of the building instead. My mum was there and said it was dead creepy watching it crawl about. Got itself over the clock tower and one of those antennae stuck between the golden cherubs. Then it commenced screeching and bellowing on something you wouldn't believe. All these men got out the fire ladder and..."
"For God's sake, shut it, Mooney!" Sirius snapped. "We've got to think here." "Yeah! Shut it! Shut it!"
the monkey screamed, and Lupin snatched up its tambourine and hurled it several hundred yards away.
"Got another! I've got another!"
it shrieked triumphantly and broke into a frenzied sort of dance.
"I don't know why you like magical creatures," Sirius groused. "They're all so fucking annoying. I don't mean you, mate," he added kindly.
A crippled old dame with bristly white whiskers hobbled forward and poked the monkey's hairless buttocks with one of her walking sticks.
"Shut up, you filthy beast!" she shrieked. "I'm the Queen of the Hairy Chin Gypsies, and I can blow smoke rings out of my bottom!"
"Shit!" Sirius broke out laughing. "I love a crowd!"
"Yes, I am the Queen of the Gypsies, Dame of the Damned, Midwife of the Changelings, Mother Abbess of the Wicked Whores!"
the old witch sang out proudly and prodded the monkey again.
"Train's coming,"
Lupin broke in authoritatively.
"About 2 miles off."
Sirius took another look at the crowd and promptly jumped up onto a bench.
"Attention, all passengers!" he shouted importunately. "Important information from the Ministry. He who must never, ever, I tell you, never be named, has been spotted on a train heading up the northeast coast. All passengers are warned to proceed with extreme caution."
The crowd began murmuring apprehensively.
"No need for panic. Probably just a rumour," he declaimed cheerily. "Chin up, I say. Put on a brave face."
The grate of the ticket window screeched open as a stale and dusty fist of air heralded the arrival of the train.
"The train bound for instantaneous death is now approaching on platform 2, Sirius hollered, pointing his wand helpfully toward the platform. "Queue up for your tickets now. No need for worry. Prepare for the judgment of your souls. You know, just in case," he finished affably and left off the bench. No one moved towards the window.
"Just us, then, is it?"
Sirius said pleasantly to the speechless gnome behind the counter.
"Excellent. Victoria Station, my good man," he informed the creature pompously.
Once on the train, Sirius and Lupin sprawled themselves atop 3 seats apiece and began tossing a bottle of fire whiskey across the aisle while Benji stared out the window with a dopey expression.
"When will that spell wear off?" Sirius demanded impatiently. "He looks like a fucking moron."
"It's already worn off," Benji said in a pleased voice. "I'm just in a good mood. Sorry you almost drowned and all," he added unrepentantly.
The sliding door of the cab screeched open, and a very short, very fat little man huffed his way down the aisle, stopped, and blew loudly on a silver whistle.
"Tickets!"
he shouted.
"And why are there only 3 passengers on the train?"
Lupin sprang from his seat and crouched like a panther beside the man, a rather impressive balancing feat considering the fellow barely reached his knees.
"They know,"
he whispered dramatically in the man's ear.
"They know."
"Well, who knows what?"
the fellow harumphed and rapped meaningfully on the large gold star pinned to his shirt.
"I'd say you're up to something, that's what I'd say. Guilty. Got a guilty expression."
"And then there's the fact that he's crouched down in the aisle next to you," Sirius called out cheerily. "I'd say that's a bit suspicious as well, mate."
The man nodded, picked up his whistle, and blew on it for at least 60 seconds. Why he was doing this, Sirius had no idea, since the train consisted of only 2 cars, and they were obviously the only people on it.
"You, sir, are guilty,"
he proclaimed ominously, and pointed his chubby little finger at Lupin, who merely smiled insouciantly back at him.
"Guilty! Why, I've never seen anyone so guilty. Where were you on the night of August 14th?
"What?" Benji said disbelievingly. "What does that matter? It's none of your business anyway."
"It certainly is my business, I'll say. That is my birthday."
The man pulled out a writing table nearly half his size, along with a monstrous quill pen, and feverishly scribbled,
"Forgot my birthday,"
at the top of the parchment.
"Guilty, the lot of you. Now, what did these passengers know exactly?"
"They know you know who has been spotted on a train exactly like this one, and that's why they weren't getting on it,"
Lupin whispered.
"He can make himself invisible, you know,"
he added smugly, as the man peered suspiciously about the car.
"Huh?"
the conductor snorted.
"Rubbish and balderdash! Rubberdash! Balderdash! Guilty! Lying to a train conductor! Interfering with matters of transportation!"
He picked up the quill again and added,
"Lying? Interfering with matters of transportation?"
to the parchment.
"I've met him, you know, Fenwick,"
Lupin called out exultantly.
"Riddle, I've had dinner with that fucker."
"Oh, please," Benji made a disgusted face. "That's a load of bollocks."
"That is actually true, Fenwick," Sirius pronounced emphatically. "Mooney was at Sissy's house over Spring Halls, and her dad brought Riddle home for dinner. That's why he was sucking up to all the purebloods with money, see?"
"You're joking," Benji hollered delightedly. "You actually met him? What was he like?"
The train conductor tucked his quill and parchment away, apparently quite interested in this as well.
"Nasty, smarmy son of a bitch," Lupin responded idly. "He droned on and on, but then Bellatrix came in," he yelled enthusiastically. "Throw me that fucking fire whiskey, Sirius."
The fire whiskey sailed through the air and knocked the train conductor's peaked white cap right off his head, and he pulled out his quill and began scribbling furiously again.
"She took one look at him and just about crawled up in his lap,"
Lupin informed his listeners.
"Sissy and I were certain we'd get sick. He's like in his 50s, you know. And she just got married the month before. I don't remember where Rodolphus was,"
he added irritably.
"Anyway, you'd have thought their mum would say something, you know, like, 'Quit being a fucking whore, Bellatrix,' but she's a mousy little witch."
"No, she isn't," Sirius chimed in crossly. "I like Aunt Oblivia. She's got this concentration problem is all."
"This is my fucking story,"
Lupin snarled.
"And if I say she was mousy, then she had a tail and lived on Swiss fucking cheese. Anyway, she goes off upstairs with a headache, and their dad, he gets pissed as hell because Riddle's looking over his daughter, so he tells the butler to show him out."
He tilted the bottle of fire whiskey to his mouth and drained it dry.
"Well, out got her dad, and the butler looks at Riddle, and Riddle looks at the butler, and he says he's did not have a mind to leave yet. The butler scarpers off, cowardly beast. Leaves me and Sissy with Bellatrix trying to shove a tongue down his throat.
Bellatrix Lestrange?
The train conductor interrupted eagerly.
Is that who you are speaking of? Why, I've heard about her. Guilty. Guilty as sin. I've never heard of anyone so guilty.
Yeah, Bellatrix Black Lestrange,
Lupin replied in a satisfied voice.
And you're right. She's guilty of everything. You name it, and she's done it.
Tell Fenwick about Bella's wedding, Mooney,
Sirius demanded.
Right, sure,
Lupin responded agreeably.
Sissy was a bridesmaid, so she had to go, and she wanted me to go with her. I said I would, but then we found out Bellatrix didn't invite Sirius.
But you hate Bellatrix,
Benji told Sirius with a baffled expression.
Not a point, Fenwick,
Sirius responded scornfully.
We grew up next door to them. They were like our evil sisters, and I don't even get a fucking invitation just because I'd been banished from the family. What the hell was that?
Anyway, first we thought, well, we just won't go,
Lupin continued.
Which means, Mooney said, look, Sissy, we're not going,
Sirius interjected.
And then we decided it would be better to go and get revenge for him.
Which means, Mooney said, no, we are going to go and do something horrible to her.
What kind of revenge?
Benji asked avidly.
There were bats,
Lupin smirked in response.
Thousands of bats, Fenwick, in the belfry, in the vestibule, and flying round the pews, flapping in the guests' faces. One of them flew up her dress, but I think she liked that.
And they conjured up in theory,
Sirius grinned exultantly.
Six of them! Yeah, we did. They were kind of prancing down the aisle like this.
Lupin jumped up and did a nimble sort of leap in the corridor,
moaning, don't leave us, Bella. Who's going to blow us now? And you said I was the best you ever had.
Nice, Benji commented admiringly.
Well, Sissy made them talk,
Lupin replied fairly.
She's really good at necromancy spells.
All the blacks are good at necromancy spells,
Sirius declared arrogantly.
We work well with the dead.
I told Bellatrix they added to the theme,
Lupin informed Benji in an offended tone.
You know, afterwards, when she was screaming and trying to kill me. You never saw such a dead-ass creepy wedding in your life,
he said vociferously.
It was in this old haunted church that made the Slytherin dungeons look like Madame Puddyfoot's. There was a 500-foot-tall pipe organ and a headless zombie playing the Neolithic funeral march while Bellatrix slithered down the aisle in a black leather gown with a train made of live snakes.
All formal weddings are like that, Mooney,
Sirius decreed loftily.
You just haven't ever been to any.
No, they aren't, Benji argued.
My older sisters had weddings so formal they each got 2 pages in the Prophet, and none of their weddings was anything like that.
Told you,
Lupin said nastily to Sirius before turning back to Benji.
Bellatrix had this glass vial round her neck, see? And guess what was bouncing around inside that vial?
He paused dramatically, and the train conductor rubbed his chubby hands together and shivered with anticipation.
Her dead grandmother's eyeball, that's what!
There's nothing weird about that, Sirius barked out. She loved that stupid old cunt. It's a black family tradition to honor the dead,
he groused.
I've got me Uncle Shagbert's ear in a vial hanging from a watch chain. You know, the one that left me the money.
That's sick as shit,
Lupin retorted.
That is just disgusting.
I wonder what he'd keep of you if you snuffed it,
Benji remarked thoughtfully.
Nothing,
Lupin replied in a surly voice.
He isn't keeping anything.
If you snuff it, I'm putting your head on that table instead of the giant's,
Sirius informed Benji decisively.
That big head takes up the old fucking table. If it were your head, I'd have room for me wireless.
Benji looked repulsed by the statement, but unfortunately had no time to respond, since the train abruptly screeched into Victoria Station and slammed to a stop.
Now, here are your tickets,
the train conductor grumbled as he handed each of them a piece of parchment.
Take them to the M&E officer, stationed by the exit, and he'll lock you up.
Sirius looked at the parchment in his hand.
Charges. Forgot my birthday. Lying. Interfering with matters of transportation. Profanity. Loudness. Disreputable conduct. Knocked off my cap. No respect. Did not tell me hello.
Are you fucking mental, you fat-ass little dwarf?
He yelled incredulously.
Why in the bloody hell would we show this shite to the MLE?
It isn't a crime not to tell you hello,
Benji spluttered.
We don't even know you. How would we know your birthday?
The man muttered and snatched the parchments out of their hands, returning them 5 seconds later with the following addition.
Arguing.
Lupin held up his parchment in front of the train conductor's face and ripped it slowly in half with a dramatic show of insolence, and Sirius and Benji laughed triumphantly.
"Ha!"
the man screamed as the two halves slowly arose from the floor and adhered themselves together again.
"Everyone tries to tear it up. Can't be done. Magical parchment."
The documents in their hands now contained the words,
"Tore up the parchment,"
as well. Lupin snatched the quill out of his hand and began scrawling furiously.
"You forgot something here,"
he told the train conductor threateningly and shoved the parchment under his nose.
"I added it in at the bottom. You forgot the most important charge of all."
Sirius glanced down at the parchment and winced.
"Torched up the motherfucking train conductor."
"Mooney,"
he sighed and draped an arm around Lupin's shoulder.
"You don't want to do that, mate. Murder's such a nasty business. Dumbles won't be proud at all. You really don't want to do that."
"Yes, yes I do,"
Lupin replied stubbornly and whipped out his wand.
"I really do."
"You can torch up the train," Benji blurted out. "You know he loves his train. He'll be pissed as hell."
The train conductor waddled out onto the platform, violently blowing his whistle, and the three boys hurried behind.
"All right,"
Lupin said peevishly and stopped 10 feet from the train, eyeing it with interest.
"That's what we'll do then."
He glanced over at Sirius.
"What do you think, Padfoot? Double play with Ox?"
"Yeah," Sirius yelled enthusiastically. "Perfect! We'll blast that bloody thing 1,000 feet up! It'll be... What the fuck?"
The blue monkey hurtled itself with a great screech from the top of the train, still stubbornly clutching its tambourine. His fedora appeared somewhat battered, but remained tilted at a rakish angle atop his head.
"That's pretty good, mate," Sirius told the monkey, motioning to the hat. "How now do you keep it on?"
"Sticky charm! Sticky, sticky!"
The monkey sang out delightedly and thumped twice on the tambourine.
"Ha ha ha! Free ride! Free ride!"
"That's a muggle song," Sirius informed the monkey cheerily. "It goes like this. Come on and take a free ride, come on and sit here by my side, come on and take a free ride."
"You might ought to back up,"
Lupin told the monkey kindly.
"We're going to blow up this train."
The monkey grabbed Benji's hand and scuttled back toward the station house, clapping a large paw over its eyes.
"Confringo Maximus!" Sirius bellowed.
"Hoggalo Fiend Fire!"
Lupin shouted as they thrust their wands toward the train, and a deafening boom shook the platform and rattled the windows of the station house, where an avid crowd had pressed their faces to the glass. 4 pieces of flaming train rocketed up into the night sky and exploded, the debris hanging for an expectant moment amidst the blood-red clouds like the detritus of the apocalypse. The brief silence was broken by a loud whistling sound and a tremendous splat as pieces of train plummeted through the air and crashed into the Thames. Sirius and Lupin screamed with laughter and pitched about on the platform with glee.
"Those pieces might have landed on someone," Benji yelled out in a panicked voice. "Hey, get off me!"
The monkey had flung its arms around his neck and now swung across his body, its big lips parted and enormous teeth chattering in terror.
"Had time to get out of the way,"
Lupin replied unconcernedly.
"Why are you carrying a fucking monkey?"
"I'm not..."
The doors to the platform opened with a bang as a crowd of shocked witches and wizards pushed their way onto the platform, staring up at the sky in disbelief.
"Time to go!"
Sirius yelled and burst into song as he sprinted into the station house, Benji and the clinging, swinging monkey in hot pursuit.
"The mountain is high, the valley is low, and now you're confused on which way to go."
Sirius liked a soundtrack to accompany his adventures.
"So I'll come along and give you a hand and lead you to the promised land. Come on and take a free ride."
Sirius grinned and the monkey let out a delighted ha! When Lupin whizzed past them, standing upright in a trolley cart, he had apparently enchanted for speed, since it was rocketing along at about 60 miles an hour. A group of men threw themselves to the side as he zoomed towards them, sending a tiny old witch right up into the air, and the monkey screeched and pounded approvingly on its tambourine when she landed headfirst in a large rubbish bin. Sirius looked at the wrinkled black stockings and kicking feet protruding from the bin, burst into a fit of laughter, and sang even louder.
"Come on and take a free ride!
Free ride!"
the monkey echoed.
"Come on and sit here by my side! Come on and take a free ride!
Yeah, 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 yeah!"
Lupin and his trolley shot off towards the exit, flying past the one marked West Ministry Lane, and veering towards a tiny brown door labeled Muggle London.
"Where is he going?" Benji panted. "That door's gonna tie his bloody head off," Sirius pronounced with relish. "Wait and see, he'll never get through there."
2 seconds before the trolley hit the door, however, Lupin pitched himself backwards into a fetal position, and the car buzzed through the doorway with inches to spare.
"What the fuck?" Sirius shouted. "Where the hell is he going?"
He and Benji ducked through the same door and watched disbelievingly as Lupin sprang from the trolley, bounded in front of a double-decker bus, vaulted across the bonnet of a black cab, and disappeared into the darkness, leaving an 18-vehicle pileup in his wake. The empty trolley clattered aimlessly down the road before slamming into the backsides of a pair of nuns. "Fuck!" Sirius yelped as he strode through the roundabout with Benji hurrying behind.
"Fucking Blue Mooney in Muggle London! This is a fucking disaster, Fenwick!"
He glared over his shoulder at Benji, who was still unsuccessfully attempting to prise the monkey from his neck, as if to indicate this was all his fault.
"Yeah, I don't know what to do here either," Benji agreed gloomily. "He's not gonna have a clue."
"Free ride in the trolley! Free ride, yeah, yeah!
Forget about that trolley!"
Benji bellowed at the monkey, who sullenly closed his mouth and whacked him on the head with the tambourine.
"Isn't it he doesn't know what to do here?" Sirius barked out. "He knows his way round. Have you forgotten about him and Elizabeth floating along on their shimmering cloud of la-la loony love in Kensington Park at a magical golden moment in Chelsea Gardens when she told him she never goes out with boys alone, or every honeyed word that bubbled like nectar from her rose-red lips the day they ate lunch at the Churchill Arms, or their tragic last day together in bloody Berkeley Square Gardens where Romeo and Juliet made the motherfucking snow? No, angels," he screamed, "because I haven't, and I never will. Those fucking stories are burned into me brain and have mutilated it beyond repair."
The monkey hopped out and went scurrying off into the darkness.
"Yeah," Benji responded gloomily. "You know, I've heard all those stories too. I just didn't know where those places were. And I wasn't asking any questions," he added fervently. "Well, that's always for the best with Mooney,"
Sirius replied fairly, his rage apparently spent.
"Let's get out of this crowd and..."
"Stop!" a commanding voice rang out.
"Stop in the name of the MLE!" "Shit!"
Benji hollered desperately, and they took off running again.
"Oh yeah, follow us out to fucking train station!"
Sirius shouted angrily over his shoulder.
"Don't bother the fellow who capered across the street like a flaming idiot and caused God knows how many injuries to a bunch of muggles. Get after the ones who are trying to stop the stupid fuck!"
Apparently the MLE neither understood nor appreciated irony, however, since they continued their pursuit all the way down Lower Belgrave and through Eaton Mews, where Sirius stopped short, whirled around, and pointed his wand directly into their eyes.
"Illumino!"
The men staggered backwards, momentarily blinded, and the boys wheeled wildly into an alley which seemed to have been set up as an obstacle course. They took an Olympic-worthy long jump over a coven of cats, hurled over a row of very thorny shrubs, high-vaulted themselves over an 8-foot brick wall, and dropped neatly on their feet on the other side. Their pursuers weren't quite so quick about this, which gave Sirius and Benji the 8 seconds needed to roll into a gutter and disappear from view. They climbed out, grumbling, 10 minutes later, and continued down the street until Sirius stopped to point towards a tall wrought iron fence with pointed spikes and a sign labeled Eccleston Square Garden.
"If you do it right," he informed Benji, "you'll end up inside West Ministry Lane Gardens. You know, our part of town. Watch."
He raced towards the gates, grabbed the horizontal crossbar above the sign, twisted through the air, and thumped happily onto the ground. Once seated, he forgot all about Benji and began rummaging through his cloak pockets, smiling contentedly when he pulled out 2 Cornish pasties and a flask of Euphoria elixir. Benji strolled slowly into view, looking a bit nervous.
"Sit down, Fenwick," Sirius called out generously and waved a pasty at him. "Tuck in, mate."
Food always made Sirius feel kindly. Benji, however, did not stir.
"Sirius," he whispered urgently. "Sit down, Fenwick,"
Sirius repeated impatiently and stretched out lazily on the grass, shoving half a pasty in his mouth as he did so.
"I've got to think about where Mooney would go." "Yeah, we've got to think," Benji stressed. "We've got to think about them."
Sirius glanced to his right and saw 10 people, neither moving nor speaking, standing in a row against the opposite fence some 20 feet distant. One man was at least 9 feet tall, with an enormous bald head as shiny and white as a peeled egg, and sheet metal armor wrapped around his torso. Behind him were two women with ghastly green faces, pointed horns, cloven feet, and talons. And next to them stood a garishly dressed clown with a distorted grinning mouth that dripped blood down his red and white striped suit. He cocked his head to the side and waved at them with what should have been a hand, but instead was an enormous metal hook. The other six made the first four appear positively charming.
Shit!
Sirius groaned and threw down his pasty, and they were instantly surrounded. Sirius never went anywhere without at least three weapons on his person. Years of street fighting taught you things like that. He imagined Benji didn't know it, however, so his first move was to pull a knife from his boot and flip it towards Fenwick. Benji caught it deftly by the handle, but when he stabbed out at the jumble of faces and weapons encircling them, he accomplished nothing more than producing a loud clang as the knife deflected off the bald man's vest. Sirius plunged his dagger in a short sword with sharp upthrust of each hand simultaneously into the throats of a green-faced woman and the clown, and they dropped neatly to their knees, throats gurgling and spewing, and toppled sideways across one another. An electrical charge surged through his body at the thrill of the kill, and he leapt into the crowd, a whirlwind of successive kinetic movements. An ogre slashed his right leg, and he kicked the sword away with his left. A grotesque old woman with a mouthful of fangs bit down his arm, and he stabbed her right through the back of the neck. The creature spewed out a torrent of vomit and blood and crumpled into a heap. But before he could bask in the triumph of "Another one bites the dust," Baldy slugged him like a prize fighter. Flash bulbs exploded behind his eyes. The man screamed with elation and lunged forward just as Sirius recovered his balance and did the same, and somehow they ended up with their arms around one another's waists, reeling back and forth like a pair of drunken waltzers. The impromptu dance ended abruptly when they reached a low stone bench, which cut them off at the knees, and they crashed over it in slow motion. The back of Sirius's head hit the frozen earth so hard, every tooth rattled, and Baldy jumped up quickly and drew back a pickaxe for the final blow. Sirius kicked up, a heavy boot landing squarely in the center of the man's unprotected groin, and he let out a high-pitched ululation of agony and doubled over, dropping his weapon.
"Make a move and your friend gets it!"
someone screamed as he stumbled to his feet and reached for the axe, and he saw four shadowy figures in the distance securing a struggling Benji with cords of rope, while a tall figure shrouded in a cloak held a wand to his throat.
"Fawn!" Sirius snapped and dropped his arm to his side. "I'm not moving. What do you want with us?"
"This is our turf!"
the remaining green-faced woman screamed shrilly.
"You trespass on our turf!"
"Well, fuck me," Sirius barked out incredulously. "Do you ever think he's just asking us to leave?"
There was a moment's silence.
"No," the bald man mumbled sheepishly. "Guess not. Thought you was after us."
"That's all right,"
Benji's voice rang out hopefully in the darkness.
"Not a problem."
"I'd let you go now," the bald-headed man continued, his voice turning hostile. "If you hadn't killed Parvo there."
He glanced down at the crumpled clown, its hooked hand outstretched, and let out a shuddering moan.
"Parvo was like me brother,"
he choked out.
"I'm awfully sorry, mate,"
Sirius said earnestly.
"Really, I am. It was only done in self-defense. I'm certain that Parvo was a great guy."
Baldy emitted a strangled gasp of grief and clutched his chest.
"Yeah, I've heard of him," Benji yelled frantically. "One of the best fighters in London. That's what everybody says."
The hairless giant nodded his head slowly, his eyes streaming with tears.
"One of the best fighters in London, but with a heart of gold,"
Benji pronounced melodramatically, and Sirius winced. "Let's not get carried away with it, Fenwick." Benji's words, however, seemed to touch the giant man deeply.
"That's right, me boy,"
he howled and broke into great guttural sobs.
"A heart of gold, that's what he had. Me best chum, me join a plight, me and him, through thick and thin."
He dug a filthy sleeve across his face and blew his nose into it.
"Him now, he can go,"
Baldy bawled out in an anguished voice, pointing towards Benji.
"He ain't killed nobody, and he understood about Parvo."
He began blubbering so violently, further speech was impossible.
"Thanks,"
Benji called out fervently as the group untied and sullenly thrust him forward.
"That's awful nice of you. I'll never bother your turf again."
He sprinted off into the darkness.
"You're gonna die, though,"
Baldy rumbled ominously at Sirius.
"Gonna slice you up like mutton, see? For Parvo."
His voice broke on the word.
"Hang on,"
Sirius announced defiantly.
Wait just a minute here. You're talking about avenging Parvo by bullying up 7 people against 1 innocent teenage boy? That's not a fair fight, mate. It's dishonourable to his memory, he said sadly. If it were Parvo avenging you, well, he'd take the fellow on man to man. That's just the sort he was, he nodded decisively.
Huh, the man grunted. Guess you're right. You and me, then. To avenge...
Sirius clenched his hands into fists. Do not say it. Do not say his fucking name again.
Parvo!
Baldy wailed.
Choose your weapon.
Vons,
Sirius hissed. Baldy looked a bit surprised at this. He probably didn't own one, Sirius thought. But not as surprised as he did 60 seconds later, when an arrow sang through the night and plunged into his back, the tip exiting at a perfect angle through the apex of his heart. He pitched straight forward like a fallen redwood tree and did not move again. 12 more arrows sliced through the air at a rapid-fire pace, taking out the remaining green-faced woman, the ogre, and a 2-headed giant goblin with 16-inch fingers. Fucking Fenwick summoned his bow, Sirius thought delightedly, and he's up in that tree. Benji had won every archery competition at Hogwarts for 7 years straight, and could put out an eye, probably through the center of the pupil, at 400 feet. The tall man in the hooded cloak lifted his wand and screamed a killing curse towards the tree, and Benji dove a split second before the tree limb upon which he'd been sitting was blasted into smoldering smithereens. He hit the ground with an expert rolling fall, but someone's enormous black boot kicked him savagely in the head, and he sprawled out motionless onto the grass. Sirius threw up a shield charm, and the remaining 4 crashed right through it. Fuck! Fuck! Nobody got through his shield charm! They took him down with skill and precision, a backward sweep of his legs to dislocate a knee, a headbutt to the groin, a dive across his chest, and the rapid summoning of all of his weapons. He ended up flat on his back, staring into the keenly intelligent obsidian eyes of a pockmarked man kneeling across his chest, his eyes barely a foot from Sirius's own. The man stretched out a long, bony hand and flexed it experimentally, and a sickly greenish light illuminated every bone within.
Well, that's just creepy, mate,
Sirius told him amiably. His assailant ignored the comment and extended his fingers, and Sirius glimpsed 2-inch razor blades extruding from the fatty pad of each fingertip before the freakish hand closed around his neck. Tips and then blades sank through his skin in a brutal vise, squeezing ever closer to arteries, windpipe, esophagus. Sirius kicked up into the man's groin, bashed him on the sides of the head with his fists, and tried to spit in his eyes, but the man only chuckled. He could smell his rancid breath hot and fetid against his cheek.
Crack!
A blazing snake of white-hot fire sizzled through the darkness like a whip, snapping around the man's wrist and burning through the flesh in a millisecond. The fingers around Sirius's neck slackened as the lethal paw dropped with a dull thud onto his chest. And that's how things are during a war, Sirius thought cheerfully. Someone's fucking hand is lying on your chest and you are damn happy about it. You're happy as shit. Even the warm blood gushing from the hand and soaking his shirt was comforting. Anger and horror intermingled on the man's face as he drew back involuntarily and stared in disbelief at the singed, smoking stump above his wrist.
Sucks to lose your wand hand,
Sirius rasped out.
Curse fart too. Wherever heal.
He knew he shouldn't take his eyes off his attacker, but couldn't help looking over the fence, where, as he'd expected, Lupin was standing on top of the bars, his feet planted neatly between the metal spikes. He looked singularly evil, Sirius thought with satisfaction, silhouetted against the nearly full moon, with his black cloak billowing in the wind and his eyes glinting a dark liquid gold, like a sunset in hell. The 4 men weren't easily cowed, unfortunately, and immediately sent a torrent of wand blasts in Lupin's direction. He let out a gleeful yell and started leaping happily atop the rails, jumping over 1 jet of light and doing a half handspring to avoid another. With a great bounding leap, he sprang from the fence and landed on his feet with his wand out thrust.
Missed me,
he called out cheerfully.
Confringio!
Bodies exploded and the world went black. The heel of a dismembered foot caught Sirius in the chin.
Fuck!
He yelled.
What the hell? I can't see either.
Lupin's voice floated up within the darkness.
Must be Peruvian darkness powder, surely. That one whose hand I got, he disapparated before they blew up,
he grumbled.
Asshole.
The blackness wafted away, and Sirius got to his feet.
Where in the hell have you been?
He demanded.
How'd you go to Muggle London? to kill feral wolves,"
Lupin replied in a satisfied voice.
"Read something in the Prophet last week. They were hiding out in a tube at Pimlico, and they were still there,"
he said enthusiastically.
"I guess they don't keep up with the news."
"Well, at least you had a good time, mate,"
Sirius responded agreeably.
"You have no idea,"
Lupin responded slyly. "Not going to ask," Sirius decided.
"Fenwick!" he yelled. "He's still alive?"
A faint groan sounded from the distance, and Benji stumbled forward, holding his head.
"Are they all dead yet?"
he asked irritably.
"All but one,"
Lupin rejoined sulkily.
"He's not got his wand hand," Sirius told him soothingly.
"He'll be a sad motherfucker without that." "Riddle will conjure him up something new,"
Lupin groused.
"I know that one was a Death Eater."
"Who?"
Benji demanded.
"Who was?"
"Yeah," Sirius said thoughtfully.
"I think you're right."
And that, although he didn't realize it at the time, was Lupin's first encounter with Augustus Rookwood. 12 hours later, Sirius, Lupin, and Benji, still quite drunk and pleased with themselves, shambled through the headmaster's office door at Hogwarts, followed by a red-faced, furiously scowling Arthur Weasley. Dumbledore sat at his desk, cheerfully arranging chocolate frog cards with an oddly satisfied expression, considering the circumstances. And beside him, his muscular arms folded menacingly across his chest, loomed frowning Kingsley Shacklebolt in his Auror's robes.
"Look, it's spackled out,"
Sirius hissed to Lupin.
"He looks like a giant oak tree that sprouted up out of the floor. Isn't that him?"
"That's him,"
Lupin pronounced without bothering to lower his voice.
"He's a great arse now, surely. I can tell just by looking at him, you know?"
Kingsley's eyes flashed, but he neither moved nor spoke.
Come in, boys. Arthur!"
Dumbledore stood and beamed at them all as if this were a welcome social visit.
"You're all looking quite well."
The statement could not have possibly been farther from the truth. The three unrepentant hooligans sported a variety of cuts, burns, claw marks, scratches, puncture wounds, and broken bones, and their shirts, trousers, robes, and boots were tattered and crusted with blood. Lupin had pieces of fur matted in his filthy blonde hair, and Benji's black locks contained a swinging strand of seaweed. Sirius, in his usual irritating fashion, looked even handsomer than usual, with a few jaunty cuts across his face and a manly shadow of black beard. The wide stripe of pink paint in his hair only highlighted how perfectly his ebony curls fell against the exquisite planes and angles of his face, and augmented the vintage bottle blue of his thickly lashed eyes. Kingsley's first impression of Sirius was that he embodied the phrase sinfully handsome, and a second was that he would either kill him or fall in love with him at some point in his life. As usual, his speculations were correct. Arthur was physically uninjured, but seemed to be teetering on the edge of a mental breakdown of the homicidal variety. A large vein in his temple bulged and throbbed rhythmically. His normally pale face was redder than his hair, and he kept clenching and unclenching his fists in an ominous manner.
"This meeting has been called on the request of the Minister of Magic," Kingsley bellowed as soon as the miscreants were seated solemnly in front of him, "who has asked myself, as an Auror, to represent..."
"What the fuck are you yelling?"
Sirius interrupted rudely.
"We're sitting right in front of you, asshole. You've moony headache,"
he added sanctimoniously.
"Do you know how good his hearing is?"
Shacklebolt stared at Sirius with a disbelieving expression.
"Quite true, Kingsley. No need for shouting," Dumbledore sang out joyfully. "Why, it's Christmas time. Peace on earth. Goodwill towards men. Heaven help the harking angels. Baby in a manger."
He picked up a candy cane and took a noisy, satisfied bite, and Arthur let out a sob of pain at the word baby.
"My, I do appreciate a genuine peppermint candy cane from Lapland," Albus commented with a satisfied sigh. "I trust you have all had a most enjoyable holiday. I, myself, have had an extremely gratifying and thoroughly enjoyable holiday. I do not believe I've ever had a better one."
"That's why he's so happy,"
Lupin told Sirius knowingly.
"I reckon he's been off shagging someone."
Dumbledore merely smiled serenely at this inappropriate remark.
"Who's the lucky lady, sir?"
Sirius asked with interest.
"Ah, well, that would not do to be told," Albus replied mysteriously. "I'm afraid I must remain mute on the subject. I can inform you, however, that my success with said person, who is not known to any of you, I assure you, was the culmination of 12 years of thwarted efforts, during which time the lady and I kept company, yet she wished her virtue to remain intact, which I fear is no longer the case.
If you do not mind, Kingsley spat out furiously, I would like to return to the purpose of this meeting.
Well, if you must, Albus yawned and began cleaning his glasses.
The charges are as follows.
Shacklebolt boomed and fixed the offenders with a foreboding stare.
Unauthorized entrance into the ministry after hours with an attack upon a security warlock. Unauthorized entrance into the office of the Minister of Magic with placement of a dead troll into the minister's chair. Unauthorized...
We didn't attack Grindelwald, Sirius sputtered out angrily. That sodding motherfucker came after us.
We didn't even stun him, he scowled. Which we should have done, Mooney. You left him tied to a chair, wearing a pink ballerina costume, Kingsley roared. The ensuing distraction kept ministry workers from their duties for over 2 hours.
Dumbledore began chuckling, a sound which turned into a cough when Shacklebolt swung his head in his direction.
Something in my throat, he gasped out and waved up a glass of water for good measure. Do go on, Kingsley. You boys killed a troll, Arthur burst out furiously. An innocent troll?
We didn't kill it, Sirius pronounced vehemently. It tripped over Fenwick and fell in a fountain. We tried to get it out.
You were unable to lift the head of the troll from the water, Shacklebolt intoned icily. Yet you managed to drag him down 17 corridors, up 12 flights of hidden stairs, and prop him up in the minister's chair.
I operated him there,
Lupin called out proudly.
I have to practice on dead people, he informed Dumbledore irately, because no one alive will let me practice on them.
He scowled meaningfully in the direction of Sirius and Benji.
Last day you tried to apparate turn into a pile of green slime and exploded, Mooney,
Sirius yawned.
And the one before that just shot up in the air and kept on going, Benji yelled excitedly. It went higher and higher until...
Furthermore, Shacklebolt shouted, the accused defaced ministry property by means of a coloration dispel, which left the entire atrium a rather revolting shade of carnation pink.
Sirius is brilliant with defacement spells,
Lupin said proudly.
Although he was trying for red, actually.
Why'd you ever say that? Sirius barked out. You know, if you quit talking before you were halfway through, I might be able to stand you. This is still a thoroughly impressive feat, Dumbledore assured him. Quite impressive indeed. I'm rather fond of pink myself.
He glanced down at his black robes with a sad expression.
I do believe I would like some new garments, he murmured. Perhaps a pink silk waistcoat with a bit of clever embroidery.
You turn a smart figure in that, sir,
Sirius told him earnestly.
Spiffing,
Lupin added promptly.
Dapper, really. Is there anything you would like to say in your defense?
Kingsley thundered at the three.
Anything that is even remotely on the subject?
Sirius sat up and assumed a countenance of noble betrayal and terrible suffering.
We've had an awful time of it, sir, he informed Dumbledore sadly. All this killing we've had to do, and us barely 18. We can't hardly sleep at night. And we...
Unfortunately, he glanced over at Lupin during the speech, and when their eyes met, they promptly toppled over laughing.
Good heavens! Arthur hollered and banged his fist on a nearby table.
You boys are in a great deal of trouble. You best belt up, I say! I can't help it, Lieutenant Weasley,
Sirius responded loftily.
I use my rapier-sharp wit to deal with all of the inner pain. You know me and Mooney. We're all about repressing the dark side,
he finished in a practical voice.
Yeah, Benji put in helpfully. I think that's true, sir.
Lupin leaned forward in his chair and fixed Dumbledore with a positively woebegone expression.
You ain't not to believe it, sir,
he told Dumbledore reproachfully.
How abusefully Weasley's kept bellvering on at us all on account of dropping by the ministry after hours, you know. And I hadn't say, but that we wouldn't have loped right off with no one the wiser if that unaccountable old
glass-eyed bugger didn't happen along after us when we were back-turned and then news it about to the minister.
If he's finished heatedly.
What?
Kingsley broke in.
What the hell are you trying to say?
I just said it.
Lupin spat out insolently.
Are you deaf or something? I'm starving here,
he told Dumbledore accusingly.
Can't you send up a kitchen elf with a steak?
It's 2 days before a blue moon, you see, Dumbledore informed Shacklebolt with a regretful glance. He cannot control his behavior at this time. I can assure you it is not his fault.
Of course it's not,
Kingsley snarled and glared at Benji.
Fenwick, how in the hell did you get involved with this?
Benji indicated the flag in his ear with a delighted expression.
They made me an honorary marauder, he sang out proudly. That's why I went. Although the flag's got a hole in it now from a wand blast when that moody fellow was trying to kill me, he announced happily. We didn't know we'd be in his office working on those reports at 2 a.m, but it was the best night ever. Really, it was. I met this incredibly beautiful girl. She was so fucking hot, and we ended up fucking, which was even better than I thought it would be. And I didn't care she was actually an undead water spirit,
he finished self-righteously. Sirius and Lupin howled with laughter as Shacklebolt unsuccessfully attempted to speak.
The boys are only 7 months out of school, Kingsley, Dumbledore said kindly. Why, Mr. Fenwick could hardly be expected to refuse such an opportunity. He really cannot be blamed.
Of course he cannot, Kingsley rejoined dispassionately. It is unfathomable how anyone could blame any of them for anything at all. And what pathetic excuse may I offer the minister for the behavior of Mr. Black?
Well, there never is any excuse for Mr. Black, Dumbledore replied sadly, and Kingsley gave Sirius a nasty sort of smirk.
Don't smile at me, you great bloody troll, Sirius shouted and jumped to his feet. Who's impressed with your fucking pompous ass except yourself?
How have you possibly lived 18 years without anyone killing you?
Kingsley responded flatly.
Not even once.
Mr. Black, please, Dumbledore said wearily, and Sirius sat down with a mutinous expression. Just get on with it, Kingsley, he snapped. My, how you drag things out. What does Fudge want?
Kingsley closed his eyes and gripped the back of a chair.
The minister has offered the following terms, Kingsley responded irritably. There will be a formal apology to the security warlock, restitution of 16,000 galleons in damages, and a 7-year unpaid internship with the MLE for each of them, following the conclusion of the present hostilities.
He wants us to work for the MLE?
Sirius hollered.
I can't work a proper job. Doesn't he know about the diarrhea?
He stared accusingly from Dumbledore to Arthur.
No, I do not believe he does, Albus murmured soothingly.
Well, that's true, Kingsley, Arthur muttered. Boy's got some sort of incurable bowel disease. Could lead to fatal dehydration.
And I can't work for the Ministry, Lupin hissed at Kingsley, because of my medical condition. The Minister told me so himself after oral tryouts. You remember?
He leaned back in his chair and fixed Shacklebolt with a murderous expression.
You were there at a tryout, where I did better than everyone else at everything. I made 112% on the written exam. Oh, yes, the tryout,
Kingsley responded nastily.
Which you blame me personally, of course, when in fact it was I who spoke to the minister on your behalf and stated my opinion that his behavior was discriminatory.
There was a brief moment of silence, and Shacklebolt appeared momentarily satisfied.
Well, what could it do me?
Lupin replied churlishly. Kingsley's hand flashed towards his pocket, and half a second later, all of them were on their feet with wands in hand, except for Dumbledore.
Expelliarmus!
Albus bellowed, and 5 wands flew into his desk at once.
Oh, very good,
he pronounced mildly, as he placed them in his desk drawer and made a show of locking it.
Now, there's no need for these hostilities and futile arguments to continue, none whatsoever, when it is quite apparent to me where the fault lies.
An expectant pause fell over the room.
The entire fault lies with Arthur,
Dumbledore stated decisively.
What? Arthur screamed. What the bloody hell are you saying?
I believe I sent you an owl 1 week ago,
Dumbledore responded coldly, explaining the effects of the blue moon, and trusting that you, as lieutenant, would keep things under control. You should never have let Remus out of your sight. Arthur's face went from red to purple to puce in a matter of seconds, and he stood and waved his arms wildly. "Now, the matter is settled," Albus said firmly. "Mr. Black will pay the restitution, as he has far more money than excuses, and Arthur will apologize to Helibert Grindelwald. That is all, Kingsley," he glowered at Shacklebolt.
"Well, I'll do nothing of the sort," Arthur howled. "I tell you, I've had it with these boys. I've had it with that Cyclops and his severed limb collection. I've had it with that useless, hacking old cook. I've had it with Molly and this obsessive child collecting. And I've had it with you," he screamed at Dumbledore, who apparently appeared mildly impressed. "Why, you can take this lieutenant's job and shove it up your bloody old bunghole!"
Sirius gave Arthur a look of newfound respect.
"Maybe old cut nugget's not so bad," he mused to himself and glanced up at Dumbledore. "You ought to give him a break, sir," he said emphatically. "He's been under a lot of stress. Have you heard about the twins' disaster? He's been on about it for the last 7 hours. Me and Mooney, we can't take much more."
Arthur emitted a strangled sort of sound and dropped his head into his hands.
"I don't believe you can afford to quit your job, Arthur," Shacklebolt said in a surprisingly compassionate tone.
"No, I can't," Arthur replied in a desolate voice. "I'll just have to put up with whatever abuse to which I am subjected."
Dumbledore rolled his eyes at this, and Sirius leaned forward and addressed him in a conspiratorial tone.
"Fudge doesn't know about the train, does he, sir?"
he hissed.
"The train?" Albus frowned. "Exactly what train are you speaking of, Mr. Black?"
"Did I say train?"
Sirius babbled quickly. "Oh, that rain! Rain! Mooney made it rain in the atrium!"
"No, I didn't," Lupin replied obstinately. "Can't create weather. John's the only person I know of that can do that."
"Oh, for heaven's sake," Dumbledore burst out stridently. "What on earth possessed you to say his name, Remus? Well, it's only a matter of time before—"
A thunderous boom shook the room violently, as a tornado of sulphurous violet smoke appeared directly in front of Dumbledore's desk, spinning and blowing every parchment, quill pen, candy cane, and folder onto the floor, while blasting the three offenders right out of their chairs. Dumbledore flinched backwards with an angry yelp as his waist-length white hair and beard loosened from its plaits and began blowing wildly about his face like some truly terrifying afro.
"What the—" "You cannot apparate into Hogwarts!"
Kingsley bellowed as the tornado disappeared and John Lupin came into view. John straightened his orange silk tie, dusted off the sleeves of his maroon velvet frock coat, and smoothed his hair, which was woven with brightly colored beads and elaborately braided electric blue hair extensions.
"I believe I just did,"
he sniffed haughtily.
"Now, John," Dumbledore said reprovingly, "I distinctly remember you giving me your word—"
"Well, this is an emergency. Whatever is going on here? What are you doing interrogating my great-great-grandson? Turn to your report, young man."
He eyed Kingsley with distaste.
"The Minister of Magic,"
Kingsley responded flatly.
"I'm Oral Shacklebolt." "Ah, yes, Spackledote. I've heard of you,"
John muttered suspiciously and peered over his glasses.
"Shacklebolt," Kingsley spat out. "And I'm acquainted with your reputation myself, Mr. Lupin." "Of course you are," John cackled delightedly. "Got my portrait up in the hall of the Aurors department. I am very well known, young man. Famous, renowned, celebrated, distinguished, exalted."
"John is perhaps the closest human representation to the supreme being on this earth," Dumbledore commented dryly. "Why, even as a boy he was aware of this, and commented upon it at great length during each and every family reunion to which he was ever invited."
John stared straight through Albus, as if puzzled by his sudden disappearance, and then turned around to frown at Lupin.
"Now, look at this poor boy," he shouted. "Why, he looks terrible. Awful. Hark! They're starving me to death, Grandfather,"
Lupin interrupted in a pitiful voice.
"I haven't had anything to eat for 3 days, and no one will bring me a steak." "Aren't you his lieutenant?"
John yelled angrily at Arthur.
"Weebly, is it? Don't you realize how difficult it is for this boy to put on any weight?"
"The name is Weasley,"
Arthur thundered back, and he's perfectly capable of feeding himself.
We don't even have a cook, Grandfather,
Lupin told John earnestly.
Well, that's true, Sirius interjected. He's got that raw lung disease, and all he does is lay about his tent, coughing and hacking and spitting. He's so shriveled up the Death Eaters don't even bother trying to kill him.
John narrowed his eyes at Arthur.
You will see to it that this boy is properly fed, he pronounced ominously. Or I shall see to it that your wife delivers triplets.
Well, that is impossible, Arthur snorted derisively. Just who do you think you are, sir?
I, sir, am the greatest wizard in the world,
John replied with a satisfied air.
That is exactly what I am.
The claim may be arguable, Dumbledore responded evenly. However, he is certainly one of the best wizards in the world, he sighed despondently. He's my first cousin, Arthur, and if he promises you triplets, I'm afraid three is certainly what you will get.
Well, I'll feed him, of course, Arthur burst out quickly. I'll spoon-feed him myself 4 times a day. He cleared his throat delicately.
Could you perhaps turn the twins into one?
I don't think your wife would go for that, Sirius yawned.
I mean, unless she's easy-going sort.
Well, we'll keep the twins, Arthur responded quickly. Now I must return to camp. I suppose Mr. Fenwick will accompany me. He gave Benji a horrible look. Mr. Lupin and Mr. Black may well remain here, as they are due at the Shrieking Shack in 4 hours, he finished with a pleased expression, apparently more than happy to leave them elsewhere.
I'm not going,
Lupin announced and exultantly held up his wand in the air.
I like your deck straw non-verbally and summoned it when John made all the smoke,
he gloated at Dumbledore, who merely sighed.
I should never have given you the password to that drawer,
he grumbled and fixed Lupin with a pointed stare.
Oblivio.
You gave a student the password to your desk drawer?
Kingsley said incredulously.
How could that possibly be considered appropriate?
There was a perfectly good reason, Albus grumbled, although he had no idea what it was. And he does not know it any longer. In fact, if he's told it 50 times, he will never remember it.
Who cares?
Lupin responded childishly and twirled his wand around his fingers.
Why would I want to know it? I've got my wand now, and no one's making me go to that shack.
Arthur gave Dumbledore an evil sort of have fun with that expression and picked up his hat.
Cut, Fenwick, you think I'm going to carry you to the rail station?
Benji gave Sirius and Lupin a doleful look as he hobbled off behind Arthur, and Sirius, Kingsley, and Dumbledore exchanged significant glances.
I know everything you're thinking,
Lupin told them with satisfaction.
Well, maybe not him,
he pointed his wand at Shacklebolt,
but I'm working on it. Anyway, I'll kill him first.
John leaned forward and snatched his grandson's wand from his hand so quickly he didn't even seem to move.
Turn the time back half a second, he crowed exultantly. Now you will get yourself out of that chair, Remus John, and do exactly as you are told. All right.
Lupin mumbled angrily and shuffled to his feet.
I fucking hate you,
he hissed at John. 8 days later, Kingsley Shacklebolt was wedged behind his tiny desk in his office, a windowless room he correctly suspected was the smallest in the ministry, unwillingly writing a political pamphlet for Fudge. The room was filled with books, parchments, files, folders, photographs of Death Eaters, and a Muggle CD player, all of which were floating above his head since he had nowhere to put them. A buzzing purple paper folded like a post-it note appeared 2 inches in front of his face, humming expectantly, and he opened it with an irritated expression. He found the Auror Secretary's grating voice and Cockney accent extremely annoying, and disapproved of the chatty familiarity she used with what he felt should be professional memos.
Yoo-hoo! Auror Shacklebolt! There's a young fella, well, I'm guessing he's a man. Says he'd in the order and all. I suppose he's got that fancy cloak. Anyway,
there was loud pop of bubblegum.
He wonders if he could have 15 minutes of your time, is how he put it.
Her voice suddenly became very close, as if she had a microphone pressed against her mouth.
That worry wolf lad, that's how I think it is,
she hissed triumphantly, and the paper snapped itself shut.
"Show him in!"
Kingsley bellowed without bothering to move, since his office was directly behind her desk, a spacious area far more comfortable than his own.
The secretary, a skinny woman in her late 30s with round green glasses, a long black ponytail, and a crooked purple hat, opened the door and practically shoved a startled-looking Lupin through it. Kingsley motioned towards the only chair he could fit in front of the desk, a 17th-century ladder back, much smaller than a modern chair.
"Have a seat," he said dispassionately, "if you can fit yourself in it."
Lupin sat, although he looked like a seventh year, folded up in a first year's chair.
"I'm sorry to interrupt you," he told Shacklebolt politely. "Thank you for seeing me."
Kingsley put down his quill.
"I apologize for Griselda," he said shortly. "That secretary, that werewolf boy, that's who I think it is business."
Lupin smiled and shook his head.
"Almost everyone knows werewolves have very good hearing," he replied good-naturedly. "But they are still of the opinion that if they whisper, you can't hear them."
He was indeed wearing his white order cloak, along with a red silk tie, and with his wide blue eyes and blonde hair that ruffled down around his collar, Shacklebolt thought he resembled a particularly angelic choir boy. Put together with his polite manner and formal poise, it was a rather striking transformation.
"I wanted to apologize to you for my behavior at Hogwarts,"
Lupin said earnestly.
"Thank you for what you said to the minister on my behalf. I'm sorry I didn't come earlier, but I couldn't leave camp."
"I would be happy to accept your apology," Kingsley replied sternly. "However, now that we are reacquainted under different circumstances, I will tell you that I imagine Albus is correct. This blue moon behavior is obviously not something under your control."
"No, it isn't," Lupin responded disconsolately. "But I don't use that as an excuse either."
Kingsley gave him a long look.
"You don't excuse yourself for anything, I believe," he commented impassively. "Do you, Remus?"
"No," Lupin said determinedly. "I don't. And I never will."
Kingsley pondered this for a moment and cast about for a change of subject.
"And where are your partners in crime?" he said dryly.
"Well," Lupin frowned. "Fenwick wondered if he should apologize as well, but I didn't remember him being rude to you, and there's no need for Sirius to tell anyone he's sorry because, well, he isn't ever actually sorry,"
he finished sheepishly. Both of them looked up when the door creaked open and a portly little man in a lime green bowler hat squeezed himself inside.
"Shacklebolt," he said irritably. "My word! When will you finish?"
Lupin jumped to his feet.
"Minister,"
he said quickly and gave him a formal bow.
"I'm sorry to interrupt. If you wish to speak to Oro Shacklebolt, I'd be happy to step out."
Fudge peered up at Lupin suspiciously, an expression that was immediately replaced with one of fright, and stumbled a step backwards.
"Well, yes, I mean, no. No need for you to leave,"
he boomed out in a voice of false conviviality.
"Mr. Lupin, is it? Of course, well, I've heard good things about this young man."
This was quite untrue, of course. Fudge had as much interest in his low-ranking troops as Kingsley did a harlot in a string bikini.
"Mr. Lupin is in Oral Weasley's company," Kingsley informed the minister in a bored voice. "He tells me Mr. Lupin is his best fighter, and at this young an age, remarkable."
This information seemed to reduce Fudge to a state of mortal terror.
"Well, yes, very good," he babbled. "I imagine you have. Well, I've killed many Death Eaters. Many."
Lupin brightened at this.
43, he said cheerfully. "And 16 feral wolves. In Pimlico,"
he added with an embarrassed expression.
"Ah, so you were behind that," Kingsley responded in a pleased voice. "Very nicely done. You remember the difficulty with the feral wolves held up in the Muggle Underground, Minister? Couldn't get the MLE near them. And then, like an unexpected gift, they were all found dead one morning."
He smiled pleasantly at Fudge.
"All lined up in a row. Throats ripped open."
Fudge gulped audibly and backed up two more steps until he ran into the door.
"Yes! Yes! Very good! Excellent!"
He glanced at Lupin and then quickly looked away.
"The Ministry, on behalf of the Ministry, yes, well, we thank you very much. Citation, I'll write it up today."
"Please don't," Lupin said seriously. "I don't deserve it. I mean, it was the blue moon. I just did it for fun," he explained earnestly. "Really, I enjoyed it."
Several large beads of sweat rolled down Fudge's pale face.
"Yes! Yes, certainly you did. Well, I hope there are no hard feelings," he blurted out desperately. "No hard feelings!"
Lupin appeared baffled by this.
"He's speaking about the oral trials," Kingsley intoned in a voice of barely restrained delight. "The fact that the Ministry refused you for oral training."
Fudge shot Kingsley a horrified look.
"Oh, no, sir, not at all," Lupin said sincerely. "It was good of you to speak to me in person and explain about the Wizengamot, that they wouldn't allow it."
"Yes, yes, that is it exactly,"
Fudge pronounced with a huge show of relief. "That is entirely the trouble indeed. I am quite happy, Mr. Lupin, that you have such a thorough grasp on the matter. It's a shame, however, that some compromise could not be reached, but the Wizengamot, you know, the Wizengamot!" He stared hopefully at Kingsley, who waited a full minute before speaking.
"I have a suggestion, Minister," he said politely. "You may find it favorable. There are assignments which fall outside the jurisdiction of the MLE, yet are not deemed acceptable to the Aurors, for one reason or another. Perhaps Mr. Lupin might work as a private specialist on occasion, which would grant him experience while awaiting a change in political climate."
"Well, yes, that would certainly grant him experience. Perhaps keep him from..."
He broke off quickly. "Killing you in your sleep?" Kingsley thought cheerfully. "That would more likely be done by myself, Minister. Well, one can dream."
"It would go no further than the three of us, of course. No further! Shacklebolt, of course, would make arrangements, if that is agreeable,"
Fudge stammered out frantically.
"Yes, sir,"
Lupin said enthusiastically.
"Absolutely! Thank you!"
"These will not be particularly interesting or appealing assignments," Shacklebolt warned him sternly. "If they were, someone else would want them."
"Well, that doesn't matter.
The business we were talking about earlier, perhaps,"
Fudge said meaningfully to Kingsley.
"This may work out very well. I'm awfully glad to have thought of it. Well, give him the assignment then, Shacklebolt," he demanded. "You mustn't stand in the man's way."
"Yes, please forgive me,"
Kingsley replied sardonically.
"You've certainly happened upon a most ingenious solution. A werewolf with Hogwarts education, top marks for Gryffindor, I believe, and highly trained in defense. Very, very dangerous," he added to himself. "And they are alarmingly quick, you know."
Fudge put a sweating hand on the doorknob.
"Yes, yes, of course," he practically shrieked. "I'm quite cognizant, have the greatest respect for excellent sight, hearing, yes, very useful. Perhaps you might help us out there, greatly appreciated, with some specialized cases. Would you consider your specialty, Mr. Lupin?"
"Stalk and ambush, sir,"
he replied firmly.
"Very good,"
Fudge squeaked and threw himself outside of the door, and Kingsley put his face in his hands and bellowed with laughter.
"What did I do to him?"
Lupin said in an exasperated voice.
"I hate that,"
he added irritably. Kingsley, however, was laughing so hard he could not speak.
"Forgive me,"
he said after a few moments had passed.
"I'm certain you find it tiresome." "It isn't that," Lupin frowned. "When people are frightened of you for no reason, you feel like you're some sort of monster or something, which I suppose is the point." "Nonsense," Kingsley responded sternly. "What they should be afraid of is their own stupidity. And as far as the Minister, well, he's frightened of everything," he shrugged. "Therefore, I would not take it personally."
"The Minister of Magic?"
Lupin replied incredulously.
"What's he afraid of?"
"What is he afraid of?" Kingsley said thoughtfully. "Let me think. Loss of power. The Wizengamot, making a fool of himself. His wife. Albus Dumbledore. The public. Rita Skeeter. Mice. Goblins. Loud noises. Helbert Grindelwald. Creatures with abnormally long arms. His mother. The Malfoys. His maid. The Daily Prophet. Well, I could ramble on for hours. Oh, and apparently werewolves."
Lupin sighed.
"Well, what's the assignment he was talking about?"
he queried, his face brightening.
"There is a fellow presenting evidence to the International Wizarding Convention next week,"
Kingsley responded evenly.
"And we are not so concerned about this person as the necessity of him presenting the evidence. The assignment is to escort him to the convention, stand in his defense while he presents it, and that is all. He can see himself home safely,"
he added irritably.
"Why doesn't anyone want to do this?"
"Well, you'll certainly be ambushed by dark vampires along the way," Kingsley replied pleasantly. "The disposition he's giving is not in their favor. The Aurors are not afraid of dying, but they do not wish to be bitten."
"That's understandable,"
Lupin said gloomily.
"Please do not think I'm speaking of myself or Alastor Moody."
"Why don't you two want to go, then?"
"Because we would kill him ourselves before we ever arrived at the convention,"
Kingsley responded serenely.
"He can be quite disagreeable, especially if he believes someone is helping him."
"Well, that's all right," Lupin nodded. "I've lived with Sirius for 8 years.
That will certainly be helpful, Kingsley agreed. Unlike Sirius, however, you will find him not the slightest bit of fun. In fact, should he discover at any point that he is enjoying himself, he will undoubtedly commit suicide upon his sword.
Lupin grinned at this.
Just keep in mind that once he's presented his evidence, you need never see nor speak to him again, Kingsley added wisely, and handed him a parchment. And these are the details. If you need further information, let me know. By Patronus, not Owl.
Lupin nodded, and after a few more pleasantries, set off for the rail station. If he'd known better, he thought later, he would have thrown the parchment, or himself, beneath the wheels of the train. Since he didn't, he took a brief glance at it once seated inside the compartment, and then replaced it safely inside his cloak. The Deposition of Dmitri Lupescu.